Hi, welcome back to Joe Blogs. In this episode, I want to take a slightly different perspective to the way that we're looking at this war. If you're following the channel, you'll know that we've been covering off lots of different financial aspects, the implications of everything that's happened on the global economy and on your budget. But in today's episode, I really want to have a look at what's happening on the ground, because we're now over 200 days into this war. That's almost 7 months. And when this conflict first started, firstly, I don't think anybody paid a lot of attention to it because they thought, well, Russia have invaded Ukraine. That won't really have any impact on my life. And then secondly, we all thought that it would be over in a matter of weeks, that some form of agreement would be reached, that Russia would either withdraw or they would make some sort of declaration or something would happen that would draw a line under it. But 7 months on, we're still in this war. And I think we've now all realised that what's happening in Ukraine is having a big impact on the global economy and on everybody's lives. It's driven up the price of oil and food and commodities and a variety of other things. And it's causing global chaos. So the sooner that this war finishes, the better. Then we can all start getting back to rebuilding the economy. There's been a lot of damage that's been caused that's going to take time to repair. But the fundamental issue is that we need the war to finish. And it's just been reported that Ukraine have now made some ground. They've recovered multiple towns that were previously under Russian occupation. And so in today's video, we'll have a look at exactly what's been going on the ground. We'll have a look at the Russian response because they've had to retreat from these areas. So we'll see exactly what Russia's official position is with regards to that. We'll then have a quick look at the amount of international support that's been provided directly to Ukraine. How much money has actually been given to Ukraine to help fund this war? We'll touch briefly on the two Chechen wars, because what happened in Chechnya has a lot of similarities to what's happening in Ukraine now. Russia invaded. They thought that they would be able to roll over the territory very quickly. They met with some fierce resistance, and the war lasted for significantly longer than they expected. So we'll have a look at how long those wars lasted and what the implications of that are for Ukraine. And then finally today, I'll wrap up with my summary as to what I think is likely to happen to the war, when I think we're going to see an end to it, and what the overall impact of all of this is on the global economy. So before we get started on all of that, if I could ask you to give me a thumbs up at some point during this video, if you're enjoying the content. Also, please subscribe if you haven't done so already. Don't forget, I always include chapters, so if you don't have time to watch the whole video, you can skip over things and move on to the end. And if you'd like to support the channel, please have a look below where you'll find links to YouTube Super Thanks and membership, as well as Buy Me a Coffee and Patreon.
On roads across the Kharkiv region, scenes of destruction and defeat. Russian military vehicles lie attacked and abandoned. Ukrainian forces have claimed a major victory, advancing swiftly across swathes of enemy-held territory, capturing equipment and cutting Russian supply lines. In the northeastern city of Balaklia, the blue and yellow flag is flying once again, to the surprise of locals who lived through the Russian occupation.
When the Ukrainian forces came, we honestly didn't expect it. When I saw our Ukrainian soldiers with those patches, with the Ukrainian flag, oh, it was great.
People are happy that liberation has arrived, that people are back in their homeland, happy that there's no more Russian occupation, no more oppression, no more basements, no secret service.
Ukrainian forces have enjoyed the biggest victories that they've had since Russia's invasion started on the 24th of February. They've recovered around 3,000 square kilometres, which is around 1,100 square miles, as they've pushed back the Russian forces and taken back around 50 different towns that were previously occupied. Russian forces have withdrawn from key eastern towns as a rapid Ukrainian counterattack made further gains. The remarkable advance means that Ukrainian forces have tripled their stated gains in a little over 48 hours. The map on the left-hand side here shows the area in red that was previously occupied by Russian forces on the 6th of September. And on the right-hand side, you can see the same area was taken back by Ukrainian forces, which is shown in purple, by the 10th of September. So there is a significant movement. This is the most significant movement that we've seen since the start of this conflict. Now, the recovery of this area is significant in terms of the warfare, because the town of Kupiansk was operating as a supply hub for Russian forces. So supplies were being brought into the town and then fed on to all of the forces on the front line. So taking back this town means that those supply chains have now been cut off and will put further pressure on the Russian forces who are in the occupied territories.
Russia is framing things differently. After claiming to send reinforcements to Kharkiv, the defense ministry said its withdrawal from the region was a strategic shift.
To achieve the goals of the special military operation to liberate Donbas, a decision was made to regroup Russian troops stationed in the Balaklia and Nizhny regions to bolster efforts along the Donetsk front.
Explosions struck in Ukrainian-held parts of Donbas following Russia's regrouping. Missiles also fell across Kharkiv in the hours after the operation. Ukraine remains on alert for more Russian retaliation.
Now, the loss of these areas will be horribly embarrassing and frustrating for President Putin. And it's been reported by some commentators that this is the first time since World War II that Russia have lost whole units in conflict. The loss of the town of Izium will be particularly frustrating, as the Russians spent around a month at the start of the conflict taking over that town. So it was seen as being a critical point for them, and now they've lost that territory. So the key question here really is this a turning point in the war? Is this the point where Russia starts to retreat en masse? Or will Russia try to double down on its efforts and regain this ground? Now, it has been reported that the areas that Ukraine have won over were only lightly occupied and were troops that only had basic training and a limited amount of military equipment. So it will be very interesting to see what Russia's response is to the events of the last few days and whether or not we do see an increase in the fighting or we start to see Ukraine winning more territory. Now, one comparison that I wanted to make is what happened in Chechnya. When the Soviet Union was broken up in 1991, a number of different states declared independence, and Chechnya was one of those. Now, Chechnya is a relatively small area and only has a population of around 1.5 million, so it's pretty insignificant. But the leaders who declared independence made a claim to some of the Russian oil. They wanted to take a big stake of Russian oil as part of their independence. And this didn't go down well with the Russian authorities. On the 11th of December 1994, Russia sent its troops into Chechnya to take back control of the region. However, rather than rolling over, Chechnya fought back, and the initial Chechen War lasted until the 31st of August 1996. Which was a period of 1 year, 8 months, 2 weeks, and 6 days. And this was against a nation of 1.5 million people. So this was a really big surprise to Russia. They thought that they would go in, and within a matter of days, everything would be put to rights. At the end of the First Chechen War, a peace treaty was signed between Chechnya and Russia, and everything looked to be back to normal. However, in early 2000, Russia announced its new president, Vladimir Putin, and he decided that Russia wanted to reinvade Chechnya. So on the 1st of May 2000, the Russian troops re-entered Chechnya. Once again, the Chechens were not happy about this and fought back fiercely. And this time the war did not finish until the 16th of April 2009. So the second Chechen War lasted for 8 years, 10 months and 5 days. And this was against a country that had a population of 1.5 million and was not being supported by the rest of the world. So I think there are some really worrying comparisons here, because Russia decided that it wanted to invade initially. A peace treaty was signed, but that didn't sit well with President Putin, and he decided to reinvade and take over control of Chechnya. And the second Chechen War lasted for almost 9 years. And it was reported that around 100,000 Russians died in the conflict over that period. So this was a long-standing, long-fought-out war. And if you look at what's happening in Ukraine right now, we saw in 2014 Russia invaded the Crimea and annexed that whole area. So it took control of part of Ukraine, which it claimed was Russian-speaking and should have been part of the Russian Federation. Now, at the time, it was believed that that would be sufficient for Russia, but clearly it wasn't sufficient for President Putin, and he decided that he wanted to invade again. So on the 24th of February 2022, he sent the troops into Ukraine. Now, we were all hoping that this war would be over at some point during 2022. But if we look at what's happened in Chechnya, it went on for almost 9 years. Now, I'm not saying that the Ukraine war will go on for that long, but Ukraine is being supported and funded by the rest of the world. So it's actually in a much better position than Chechnya was. So there is a possibility here that unless Russia decides to pull out or to agree to some form of peace treaty, that this war could go on indefinitely because Ukraine has access to significant amounts of military support and equipment and help. Now, in terms of the financial support that Ukraine is receiving, 34 countries have committed to providing finance and military support to assist Ukraine against Russia. Now, this table shows the amount of bilateral commitments that have been provided up until the 3rd of August. You can see that the United States is the biggest single supporter, committing over $44 billion worth of support. And this support has been split into three different sections: financial support, and the US has provided more than $10 billion of financial support. And this funding is being used to help Ukraine remain operational. So it's paying for some of the government, the civil service, all of the infrastructure that isn't able to recoup any revenue right now is being funded by overseas investment. The next level of support is humanitarian support, and the US has provided over $9 billion of humanitarian support. And this essentially is providing food and welfare for the people of Ukraine who've been displaced. So this is essentially charitable investment that's enabling those people to keep alive. But the biggest single part of the aid being provided from the US is military aid. And that comes in at around $25 billion to the 3rd of August. And this is the provision of arms and equipment and everything that Ukraine needs in the fight against Russia. Now, if we run down this table, you can see that the EU institutions, so the collective European Union, have provided over $16 billion worth of support. The majority of that support has come in the form of financial aid. That's the blue part of this graph. And the financial aid from the EU equates to around $12 billion, the humanitarian aid around $1.5 billion, and the military aid around $2.5. The United Kingdom has provided over $6.5 billion of support so far, and the majority of that support has been in the form of military spending, over $4 billion, with around $2 billion of financial support and half a billion of humanitarian. Germany, Canada, and Poland have provided around $3 billion of financial support. Norway around 1.3, France 1.1, Japan around 600 million, the Netherlands, Italy and Czech Republic around 500 million, and Spain, Denmark and Australia around 300 million. And you can see that there is a long list of countries here who are providing financial support to Ukraine for the ongoing war. Now, the reason that I wanted to show these figures is twofold. Firstly, it shows that there's a huge amount of finance available to Ukraine to keep up the war against Russia. And secondly, it shows the impact on all of those countries, because this support is money that could have been used to help grow the economies of those individual nations. The fact that they're having to now give money over to Ukraine to help them in their war means that there's a reduced amount of investment going on in each of those countries. And this is one of the problems, that a lot of cash is being diverted into the war that could have been helping to grow the global economy. And that's one of the factors that we're facing with regards to the global slowdown, that this is cash that nobody had budgeted for last year. We didn't know that there was going to be a war in Ukraine until Russia suddenly made the invasion. And now all of this funding is going, and it's essentially dead money for a lot of these countries, because it's basically trying to keep all of the people in Ukraine alive, keep the country ticking over at a time when Ukraine should actually be thriving. Prior to the invasion by Russia, Ukraine was doing well financially. It's one of the biggest exporters of a variety of food and commodity items. But unfortunately, all of that trade has been impacted directly by the war, and it's now having to rely upon charity from all of these different countries. So what's the summary and conclusion today? Well, I wanted to post this video because we all see news wherever we're going, whether it be on your phone, on the TV, on tablets, anywhere. And reports that Ukraine is now fighting back and winning back some territory is big news. And there's a tendency when you hear that sort of news to think that actually the war's now turned a corner, that Ukraine's doing well, and that maybe everything will be over soon. But I don't really think that that's the situation. It's good news that Ukraine has got back some of its land, but Russia is still occupying around 20% of the country. And in a lot of places, they are really dug in. They will be very difficult to dislodge in large areas of Ukraine. And from Russia's perspective, we've seen what their attitude is with regards to what happened in Chechnya. They came up against fierce fighting. They didn't roll over as expected. But rather than withdraw, Russia dug in and there was a very prolonged war, almost 9 years. And so the Russian mentality will not be to retreat here. They have retreated from some of these areas where they didn't have enough resources and they didn't have the right personnel in places. But I don't think that they're likely to withdraw from Ukraine as a whole. Now, it's great that Ukraine have cut off some of the supply chains. There is a possibility that they could make further advances because they've broken those supply chains. But Russia is currently occupying a large swathe of Ukraine. So it will be able to keep supplies coming across the Russian border into a lot of those different areas. So overall, even though it's good news that Ukraine are winning some of the battles, I think we're in for a long drawn out war. I don't see them pulling out of Ukraine because it's too big a loss of face for President Putin. He's made his point, he's gone in, he's taken over this territory and they are embedded. And I don't see them pulling out of the country anytime soon. There is a slim possibility that some form of treaty could be agreed, similar to what happened for Crimea, whereby Russia will say, we want to annex this part of Ukraine. All of the areas that we're currently occupying would like to join Russia, and we would propose that they now become part of a bigger Russia. But I don't think Ukraine would agree to that. So I think it's unlikely that a treaty will be signed. And when you look at what's going on financially, Ukraine are still receiving a lot of support from all of NATO and the Western world. More than 34 countries are providing hundreds of millions of dollars of support, both financial, humanitarian, and military support. So we've essentially got a position here where we've got 35 countries who are fighting this war against Russia unofficially. None of the NATO countries are actually involved in the conflict. None of their forces are on the ground. But a lot of their equipment is going into Ukraine and a lot of cash is being sent to keep the war going. So this essentially is building up like a world war without officially being one. And I don't think Russia would want to pull back from that. They're not going to lose face and say, OK, we were beaten by NATO and Ukraine. There is very little chance of President Putin declaring that he wants his forces to pull out. So it's likely that the war will carry on, certainly for the rest of 2022. But unfortunately, I've got a feeling that this war could keep going on well into 2023. And if it does, then who knows when it's going to end? Because what we've seen from Chechnya is that Russia is very happy to have a very long war with countries that are smaller than it. I don't think Russia will look to employ anything drastic. I don't think that they will threaten any nuclear strikes or anything along those lines, because that then would bring in NATO, the US, and everybody else, and we potentially could be looking at some sort of World War III. So I don't think that will happen. But equally, I don't think Russia will pull out. I think they will want to stay where they are. They may decide to make some further advances, but I guess it depends on whether or not Ukraine continue to make advances in the opposite direction over the course of the next few months. But one thing that is very interesting is the statement that's been made by President Zelensky of Ukraine.
However, I believe that this winter is a turning point, and it can lead to the rapid deoccupation of Ukraine. We see how they are fleeing in some directions. If we were a little stronger with weapons, we would deoccupy faster. We have 90 days in front of us, which will solve more than 30 years of Ukrainian independence. 90 days that will solve more than all years of the European Union's existence. This winter will determine our future and the risk it will take.
He believes that the Ukrainian winter will be the key period. And if you look back in history to World War II, one of the key turning points was when the Germans tried to invade Russia and all of their tanks started to freeze in the Russian winter. So the Russian winter, the Ukrainian winter, is a very difficult period to carry on in warfare because it's very cold and it's difficult to keep the supplies going. So Ukraine are hoping that the winter period will break Russia. But of course, Russia is familiar with the climate and it's used to carrying on a war. What's happened in Chechnya proves to us that they can have a war for more than 6 months, because the two wars that they were involved in Chechnya, the first one went on for almost 2 years, the second one went on for almost 9 years. So Ukraine are hoping that Russia may decide to pull out during the winter. But I think if you look at what's happened, it's unlikely. I think Russia are aware that it gets cold in the area during the winter months and they will be ready. And I think that's why they've dug themselves in so deeply in the part of Ukraine that they're currently occupying, so that they can keep the supplies going and they can keep their troops fighting all through that winter period. So my overall summary here is that I can't see any end in sight. I think this war is likely to carry on, and that is really bad news for the global economy, because all of the things that we're talking about in the other videos that I posted, the increase in oil prices, the increases in food prices, the increases in commodity prices, high inflation, shortages, lots of uncertainty in terms of the financial markets, all of those things will continue whilst this war is carrying on. So if this war carries on right the way through into 2023, we are going to see a really unstable financial environment. We're already on the verge of a global recession. It's likely that most countries will be in recession by the end of 2022. And if the war carries on, we could see the situation deteriorating further. And so that's obviously really bad news. So for everybody's sake and the sake of the global economy, we really need a conclusion to this war. We need to draw a line under it so that we can all start to rebuild and see what the new global financial world looks like. Because Russia is looking for new markets to sell into and looking to set up new supply chains. The West is having to change the way it does business. Europe is moving away from Russian gas and Russian oil and looking to new suppliers. So all of this is going to change over the next few years. And the bottom line for all of it is that the prices will go up. The reason that everybody was buying from Russia historically was because it was close by and it was convenient. It was being fed on pipelines. Gas and oil were being fed directly to countries. And that was the lowest cost of distribution. The fact that they're now having to buy from other people and other forms of energy means that prices will go up. So it's likely that 2022 is going to be a recession, and I think that recession could last for quite a long time. This could be as deep and as bad as the 2008 global financial crisis. So hopefully you've enjoyed today's episode. I wanted to have a slightly different flavour to talk about what's actually going on with regards to the war itself, to really talk about when that's likely to end. And unfortunately, the bottom line is nobody knows when it's going to end because it's just carrying on for the foreseeable future. So I'll keep you posted on any further news and developments that I see that I think are relevant. If you've liked what I've said today, then please give me a thumbs up and don't forget to subscribe if you haven't done so already.